Anna Wiley. I'm so pleased to be back again with Joan Price, one of my very favorite guests. She's been on a number of times. We're going to talk about orgasms, female orgasms, because orgasms feel great. They help you lose weight, believe it or not. They're good for your health, and also they're free. Hello, Joan.
Hi, Diana. Great to be on your show again.
Well, it's wonderful to have you. So let me remind people that you are the author of, let's see, your first book was Better Than I Ever Expected, Straight Talk About Sex After 60.
Correct.
And then came Naked at Our Age, Talking Out Loud About Senior Sex, which, well, I'm actually quoted in that book along with some other sexperts. And then you edited Ageless Erotica.
Yes.
And boy, is that a sexy, erotic book.
Isn't that hot?
It's very hot. And so it's not surprising that the media has dubbed you senior sexpert and also a wrinkly sex kitten.
That's my favorite ever.
I think it's just adorable. And, of course, I am always glad to talk with you, and I got to see you last June in Monterey at the ASEC conference. ASEC stands for American Association for Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And so we got to see each other then. And this whole area of female orgasms is, I think it's fascinating.
And it absolutely is.
Yes, and Anais, how do you pronounce her name? Nin?
Anais Nin.
Her quote is lovely and very poetic. Electric flesh arrows traversing the body. A rainbow of color strikes the eyelids. A foam of music falls over the ears. It's the gong of orgasm.
Wow.
Yeah,
I've never heard that quote.
Yeah, no.
That is superb.
That is superb. And, you know, there's a lot of mystery to orgasm. But
especially now as we age.
And that's what we're going to focus on that. But I also want to tell people that are younger than 50 that you should still listen, because there'll be a lot of really good information. To go back to Nin's, she was an erotic writer, of course, in the 30s, and I think we want to say that there's so much more going on in an orgasm than just plain magic. And it is a magical thing, but there's some real science behind all those arrows and rainbows and the foam of music that she described.
That's right.
So part of what we'll talk about today is about female orgasm. Give us a little peek into your book that's going to come out in January, and I'll have you back and we'll discuss it.
Well, the book coming out in January is The Ultimate Guide to Sex After 50.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I mean, after I wrote Naked at Our Age, I thought I was done. I thought I'd said everything there was to say. But I discovered, as people asked me more questions, that there are always ways to go deeper into a topic. And there's new information available all the time that wasn't available even 3 or 4 years ago. So this new book is more medically oriented than Naked at Our Age. We go in depth into some of the medical issues, including things like how to time your medications so they don't interfere with your sexuality, and how to find the best positions if you have arthritis or a hip replacement. Stuff that we need to know, right? But where do you look it up? So I've got all that and much more. Much more about how to talk to a partner about sex, how to negotiate changes in the relationship or negotiate ways to explore sexuality fully in a way maybe you didn't do before or that may have different needs now. So it's just a whole lot. It's the same friendly manner you're used to with me, but
absolutely,
a lot more content dense.
It's wonderful, and I look forward to discussing that book after it's published. So it's due to be out in January.
Beginning
right?
of January, right.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah, Joan is just, what a treasure you are. What a resource.
Thank you.
And so I want you all to go to her website, and I'll write it up, of course, joanprice.com, and you will see her books there, and also your blog. Now,
yes.
Let's before we get into the subject of female orgasms, talk about your blog.
I have a pretty old running blog for, in fact, I just figured out it's been going about 10 years, which
10
is
years.
Really unusual for a blog.
And especially for an older person writing a blog.
Well, yeah,
which means
person writing a blog.
Yeah, because it means
I'll
you got right
that.
In with the high-tech stuff and you learned how to maneuver.
It's never too late to teach an old dog new tricks.
Mm-hmm. That's great, Joan. So, but people respond to your blog very positively.
Thank you. I have a great community of people who read it, who make comments, and often email me about more private things they want to express to me that they don't want to put publicly on the blog.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of topics that readers have said they want me to talk about, their book reviews, their about 75 sex toy reviews from a senior
mm-hmm.
perspective.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and every so often I'll just get on a soapbox about something and blog about it, always to do with senior sex and relationships.
Yes, and I want to say to our listening audience that you don't have to be a senior to benefit from this discussion. I think we should start with the female orgasm with many studies, including... Well, there was a 2001 global study, this was 30 countries, of sexual behavior with over 27,000 participants, and it revealed that orgasmic dysfunction is more the norm than the exception. One-third of all women have one-third have never experienced an orgasm.
Wow.
And the second third rarely experienced orgasm.
Now, are you talking about through intercourse or an orgasm any old way?
Well, they're saying any old way.
Okay.
No, I think
because
it's probably...
Often people interpret the question.
Yeah, a lot... some women can have orgasm with self-pleasuring, with masturbation, but they can't have it with a partner. So I think this is more reflecting... not having it with a partner, but some, it didn't break it down. But
yeah, that would be important, I think, because
mm-hmm.
often the question is worded such as, do you have orgasms during sex? And then without defining what they mean by during sex.
Right.
So if someone interprets that to mean during intercourse, then a lot of women, about 70%, would say no.
Exactly
but,
right.
Yeah, but if... sex is defined as anything that causes arousal,
mm-hmm.
sexual arousal, then, okay, then it's wide open. It can be all sorts of different sexual play with a partner or without a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and one of the things that I do when I have new clients is to get them to try to say intercourse rather than sex, because sex can mean so many other things,
right.
And it should, because sex isn't just intercourse.
Right.
Yeah.
And sex isn't just sex either.
Well, that's right. That's
I know,
right.
It is all more complicated than that.
Yes. So, we when we talk about the center of letting go, it really is the brain.
It is.
And of course... the more orgasms you have, and you and I suggest to people that they spend some time with themselves, self-pleasuring, because the more orgasms you have, the more orgasms you're likely to have in the future.
Right. It becomes easier. The body expects it. The body gets aroused faster if there's regular orgasmic activity.
Right.
But let's talk about something that is even before, even before you start having sex with a partner or with yourself, there are things that you can do to increase the likelihood that an orgasm will happen.
Yes. So talk about that.
Okay,
that
and this is true for all ages, and I know you keep saying don't turn off this podcast if you're young, because this applies to everyone.
Right.
It's just that it becomes more and more of an issue as we get older, because we don't have the blood flow to the genitals that we counted on as a young person. It's just not that easy.
Yeah.
And the blood flow is necessary to engorge a clitoris or engorge a penis. So anything we do that will increase that blood flow ahead of time is going to be good for us. For example, okay, I'm coming on the E word now, exercise.
Exercise.
And there actually was one study that was done by on women who were having problems with orgasm. I think it was because of antidepressants, I believe. They were on antidepressants. And they found that in this study that if they exercised for half an hour right before sex, they more easily reached orgasm. Now,
it makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense, because when we exercise, we increase the blood flow not just to the muscles, not just to the brain, but to the genitals too. So we can extrapolate from that if we get exercise, whether we're on antidepressants or not, increasing that blood flow is such an important thing to do.
It really is.
As we age, that blood flow is decreased. So we need to pep that up again with regular exercise, and doing it right before sex will help with the sexual arousal and orgasm. Is that cool?
That's very cool.
Now, here's another thing. We often had this idea in our mind that we would have a romantic dinner with candlelight and then we'd be ready for sex. Well, the dinner part, though, doesn't work anymore. The candlelight's okay. But, but we, again, it's the blood flow thing. If the blood flow is going to the digestive system,
that's right,
it's not going to go to the genitals.
Right.
So we need to exercise before sex, but eat afterwards, not before.
And I also suggest this to men in my practice who are experiencing erectile dysfunction, and then they're on Cialis or Viagra, and they really, in order for these PDE5 inhibitors to work, they can't eat too much beforehand because of the, again, as you said, the blood is focused on digestion,
right,
going to the genitals,
right.
But so you call this track the tingle.
Track the tingle is my other before you have sex advice.
Yes.
And if we just notice what time of day we're feeling sexier, this is not all the time anymore. It comes and goes, and if we just pay attention for a few days and say, okay, when do I feel it? When do I feel that tingle? That's what I mean by track the tingle.
Yeah.
That maybe it's first thing in the morning. Maybe it's after coffee. Maybe it's middle of the afternoon. Maybe it's after a nap. You know, whatever that is, maybe a glass of wine helps. If we just track it for a few days, when we have that sexy time, and then try to schedule, I know it doesn't sound very spontaneous, try to schedule sex during the tingle time.
Yeah, I have some pushback when I suggest to my clients that they schedule sex. But we schedule lots of things, and within a schedule we can have lots of play and spontaneity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we, you know, we're busy people, but just because some of us are 50, 60, 75, it doesn't mean that we are sitting around trying to figure out what to do with ourselves. We have lots we're doing. Some people say they're busier after retirement than they were before. And other people say, what, retire? Who can afford to retire in our economy? I'll never retire. So we have people who are getting older, but without the extra leisure time. So we really need to, if sexuality is important to us, and it needs to be, We need to carve out a time in our schedule, put it in our calendars, and make sure it happens. Put it on the to-do list.
Yeah, exactly. And I have some flexibility within that, too, because sometimes people aren't feeling like they really want to make love. But I find that when people schedule sex, particularly where there's mismatched desire, where one person yeah. feels more desire than the other, that it really can work very well.
It works because you anticipate it. So you
exactly.
have this extended mental foreplay going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's going to happen. You know to expect that at, say, 1 in the afternoon on Tuesday, somewhere it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So you get excited thinking about it. There's an arousal going on in your brain, which is our major sex organ anyway.
Yes, indeed. And by the way, did you get my last email that suggested the outline for areas of discussion?
I did, but I was busy before we went on the air, so I didn't have a chance to do much.
Okay, well, it's very limited, but okay. I mean, it's just truly an outline. But I thought it would be useful to talk about things that can work against a woman who's really wanting to have either orgasms for the first time or more intense orgasms. Because as women age, the complaint I hear is that oftentimes their orgasms are muted.
Yes.
They're not as powerful.
Yes.
So for any age, though, the things that can work against really is one thing is fear. And especially for women that haven't had an orgasm, the intensity of the sensation, maybe the sounds she'll make. Although as a woman ages, she's a little less self-conscious, generally speaking.
I really don't hear women with that concern these days.
Yes. Yes, I don't either as she gets older.
The concern
or,
I
or even
get,
what she'll
though,
look like.
What they do worry about, though, is they get stressed and anxious that they won't reach an orgasm, and so it delays them or even makes the whole possibility go away.
Right. That
yeah.
is because they're focused on the destination and they're not involved with the journey.
That's true. And
yeah.
anxiety is a real sex killer.
It, absolutely.
I mean, unless you happen to really groove on anxiety.
But yeah. I haven't found any people that do.
It's an erotic killer.
Yes. But for women of all ages, there is sometimes a fear of loss of control and the vulnerability that comes with that. And but again, women as they age usually have a little more confidence, including another point that some younger women have, which is negative body image. Now, some women, older women, are worried about how their bodies look. And, of course, here we're back to your exercise, and you've been a fitness person for years.
I have, but still, we're never going to be happy with the way our bodies look.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't happy at 19, when now when we look back at our 19-year-old photos, we go, wow. Did
yeah.
I really ever look like that?
I looked pretty good.
But were we happy? Of course not.
Right.
Of course not. So the thing is to just change our attitude about that, I think, and to say, this is the body that gives me pleasure, and it's capable of giving pleasure to a partner, if I happen to want to do that. And it's the body I live in. I can own it. I can celebrate it. I don't have to wish it were some other body.
Well, of course. And some women who are over 50 have been more accepting of their bodies.
And others are less accepting.
And I know, flaws and all.
They see the wrinkles and they see the bags and they go, oh, how could anybody want this?
Yes,
well,
yes.
Easy.
Right. Now, one online survey of 15,000 people revealed that 46% of women said self-consciousness about their body often prevented them from having orgasms. So 46% of these 15,000 people. Now, these were women of all ages, And it was a Queendom, D-O-M, Queendom.com survey. But when you're anxious about your body, you tend to have less sexual desire and enjoy sex less.
Yes.
And that's too bad. Because you should be ideally celebrating your body, especially if it mainly works for you. Now, that's another thing. Sometimes older women have some depression about how things aren't working quite as well with arthritis or this or that. And you'll probably get into that. Well, you get into that some in your books, but you'll into it more with your future book, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are always things that can interfere, but if we focus our concentration on the pleasure we're getting, the pleasure we're giving, that's, I think, the real key to it.
I do, too. And we're very fortunate if we have a partner with whom we can focus this pleasure.
Or on ourselves if we don't.
Exactly. Exactly right. And I've always said that any woman who's between partners needs to have lots of self-pleasuring time so that she remains juicy.
Well, I would even amend that a little bit, because women who are unpartnered are not necessarily between partners. It could be a choice.
Okay, that's good, Joan. Expand on that a little.
Yeah. Maybe they have had a partner, and for one reason or another, it's over. Maybe he died, and he was wonderful, and she's not looking for another partner. Or maybe it was a bad relationship, and she dumped, or she got dumped, and she's not ready to repeat any mistakes until she gets to know herself a little better. Mm-hmm. She may not be thinking about a future relationship. Many of us are, but many of us are not also. So to look at it as we are just currently unpartnered, without there being a goal that there has to be another partner in our lives, because some of us won't find other partners. I know that's sort of the sad statistic, right?
Yes.
That may not happen, and the older we get, the fewer men our age are around.
That's very true.
That doesn't mean we do without affection in our life, without strong friendships, without relationships, whatever form they may take. We may have always been, for example, monogamous and only intimate with someone who was a committed partner. And at this time of our life, that might not make sense anymore. Might make sense to have friends with benefits, for example.
Yeah, well, expand on that a little bit, because you have seen that in your research that, well, friends with benefits.
Friends with benefits, I don't know whether we need to define it, do we? That's having someone in your life who is a friend, and the benefit is a sexual benefit. You also have sex, but you're not, you don't think of each other as boyfriend, girlfriend, as engaged, as any of those committed partnership things.
Yes.
It's just someone that you enjoy, you have a good friendship with, and that friendship includes sex.
Includes sex.
Yeah.
But there's no commitment.
No commitment, that doesn't mean there isn't an emotional connection. And people sometimes challenge me on that who have not had this experience, who say you're just condoning sex without no strings attached, but with no emotional component at all. And I said, no, that's not true at all. There can be a strong emotional component. It's just not a committed relationship, and neither of you wants it to be.
For the vast majority of women, they need to feel a sense of connection in order to reach orgasm. And you can have a connection.
You can have a connection, absolutely.
With a friend with benefits, too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. So you also talk about fantasy and how that can help. Whether you're having self-pleasuring or whether you're with a partner.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of fantasy as sort of a mental sex toy. It helps arouse you and get you to orgasm faster. Mm-hmm. And nobody knows what you're fantasizing unless you choose to share it, which there's no need to do. What I find that often women are afraid of a specific fantasy that turns them on, but it isn't something they can ever see themselves doing in real life, and they're afraid of what that fantasy says about them.
Yes, but, I've noticed that too.
Yeah, but a fantasy is just a fantasy. That's all it is.
Yeah.
It's just a scenario that somehow kicks in the arousal for you. It doesn't mean you're really ever going to want to do that thing. I mean, maybe you will, but probably not if it's something that you find offensive in real life. Let's take, for example, a rape fantasy. Some women have mm-hmm. rape fantasies. They do not invite rape. They do not want to be raped. They would
right.
never, ever condone rape. And they sometimes, if they're not aware that this is a very common fantasy and that it doesn't say anything about you other than for some reason your arousal kicks in, it's a fantasy only, not the reality. That they often will be very reluctant to even let that fantasy play in their mind because they think it's wrong. No fantasy is wrong. There are things that you could do in reality that wouldn't be right for you, but in a fantasy, there's no reason to clamp it down. It's just a
no
fantasy.
Reason. It can be disconcerting for some because I've had clients where they have fantasies that conjure up guilt and takes them out of the physical experience and away from the partner.
Mm-hmm.
And but then most you can imagine maybe an illicit relationship for you and your partner, and it can be really fun. You can have a fantasy of a threesome without actually doing it.
And a fantasy could be about people that you would never really have sex with, too.
Yeah, that's
there
true.
It could be a fantasy of a celebrity or
mm-hmm.
maybe your first boyfriend at age 15 who is totally out of your life and needs to stay out of your life. But in
really?
Fantasy, you're both 15 again.
And imagine
or
that.
It could be something really like being kidnapped and being pleasured by someone and being powerless to stop it. Even though in real life you're a very powerful person.
Well, that's a piece of the rape fantasy, too, that the woman doesn't, she's out of control. She's
mm-hmm.
being
mm-hmm.
she's being made love to, or not in the case of a rape, but she's having sex, and it's just, she doesn't have to make decisions about it. So.
Whatever the fantasy is.
Whatever it is.
Give yourself permission to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to be, maybe not share it with other people if you feel guilty about it. So,
Yeah.
if you think it would be destructive to a relationship, then just keep it to yourself.
And sure.
Don't ask your partner what fantasies he's having. Don't ever ask that.
No, I think that's a mistake.
Terrible mistake.
And I think that you're right. You can keep the fantasy to yourself, and you don't have to feel guilty about it. As you said, fantasies are fantasies.
That's right.
Yes.
And we sometimes find that we get a fantasy that really works for us,
mm-hmm.
and then we need to keep repeating that fantasy, and some women feel guilty. They'll say, yeah, but I'm not really concentrating on my partner. No, you are. You're
mm-hmm.
concentrating on your partner. The sensations are coming from your partner. What's happening in your brain is just adding that extra little magic.
Exactly. Now, Joan, I know you're familiar with Wilhelm Reich.
Yes.
And I'm going to give a quote here because I think it's powerful. The pleasure of living and the pleasure of the orgasm are identical. Extreme orgasm anxiety forms the basis of the general fear of life.
Mm.
And I think that that's true because when we are open and not fearful, because everyone wants an orgasm, but when we can let go and when we can realize that orgasm cannot be forced, that desperation and orgasm are really strange bedfellows. So the chances are of having an orgasm are much better, of course, on your own than with a partner. So that's why we both suggest that people practice, that women practice on their own first.
Yes.
Before. And of course, being enduring.
Able... Enduring?
Yes. And say again?
Enduring, not just before being in a relationship, but within the context of a relationship, too.
Absolutely.
Not to give that up.
Not to give that up. And self-pleasuring
in front. Not to partner to give that up, either.
Exactly. Some people have the idea that if you're in a really sexy, we've come to the break time, a sexy relationship, that you shouldn't have to masturbate at all. Well, Joan and I will continue this conversation. We're going to go to break now, and we'll be right back with more stimulating conversations about orgasms and relationships. So stay with us.
See you after the break.
Yes. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I'm here with Joan Price, the author of some really useful, wonderfully written books, Better Than I Ever Expected, Naked at Our Age, and she edited Ageless Erotica, which has got some really hot erotic stories in it. You can be younger and listening to this. Everything applies, because those of us who are well over 50 or 60 have some wisdom from life experience, right, Joan?
I turned 71 yesterday. I'm feeling wiser than I was
the
day before.
Oh, happy
birthday.
Thank you. One day late. Yes. Okay. So November the 10th.
Uh-huh.
Wonderful. Well, I hope you had a celebration.
I haven't stopped yet.
Good.
Still celebrating.
So I thought in this last half of the program, we might talk about what to do about an elusive intercourse orgasm, and also the health benefits, a little bit more about the health benefits, extending life and love with orgasms, and either with yourself or with a partner. A lot of women kind of fuss about and they find that their orgasm is quite elusive with intercourse, and I'm reminded
or doesn't happen at all with intercourse.
Or doesn't happen at all. And Woody Allen, here's a quote from him. The last time I was inside a woman was when I visited the Statue of Liberty.
I wondered which quote you were going to pull from Woody Allen. He has a lot of good ones.
He does, and that was a line from Crimes and Misdemeanors, the screenplay that he wrote. But a lot of women have some trouble with intercourse orgasms, and I'm wondering about your advice. I have some advice I give women too. We can kind of have a conversation about this.
Well, most women do not reach orgasm most easily through intercourse.
That's right.
They reach orgasm most easily through direct clitoral stimulation when they're feeling totally relaxed and in a comfortable position and all things are right and they like their partner and all these other things.
And they feel safe.
And they feel safe and they feel wanted. And they so there are so many things that go into having an orgasm that it isn't just going in and out in intercourse. Besides just the logistical thing, there is that the clitoris is often not positioned in a way that it can be stimulated enough through intercourse. Some positions are better than others, but sometimes even when it used to work 30 years ago, it doesn't work anymore that way. It's just harder to reach. The more direct stimulation is needed, or stronger or lighter or a whole different kind. So I would suggest to just experiment with what does give her an orgasm, what does work, whether or not it has anything to do with intercourse. See where hands can do it, or sex toys can do it, or lips can do it, or a combination of those. And then if you want to have an orgasm while you're having intercourse with your partners, there are ways to add that clitoral stimulation to it. For example, to add fingers or to add a sex toy that doesn't get in the way. There are some that are remarkable. They're wonderfully strong, and they don't get in the way between two bodies. There are others that just do get in the way. It's either them or us.
you can't really have it all.
But there are some that are made that are strong enough and easy to hold and don't get in the way because of the way they're shaped.
Yes. And one of the ones that I have suggested to couples is the Natural Contours Jolie, which is just nicely slanted. It's small, and it fits, it vibrates on the clitoris, but it can be incorporated into intercourse.
Yes, and there are some that that are my favorites that work that way.
Mm-hmm.
The Erosilator one with the marshmallow attachment. It's actually called the Magic Finger, but it looks like a marshmallow stuck on it.
And
it's wonderful.
I don't know about that.
Mm-hmm. It's great. It's soft, so you can press hard on the clitoris, and it makes the marshmallowy thing envelop the clitoris. So it feels like it's coming from all around. It's surrounded. It's really lovely.
So who makes that?
That is made, I'm blanking on that right now.
But it's the Erosilator.
The Erosilator.
Yeah.
No. It's on my blog, though.
Okay, good.
It's easy to find on my blog.
Yes.
And then another one, which is very new, is called the Palm Power. I don't know if we've talked about it before.
No, we haven't.
It was a discovery of just a few months ago, and it's really one of my favorites now. It is small, but it has not the intensity of the magic wand, which, of course, is huge, but it is very close. It's very strong. It's one of those plug-in, which lets it run by motor instead of by batteries, and it makes it stronger. I mean, you can have a more powerful motor that way than you can with the rechargeable or with the insertable batteries. This Palm Power is really quite wonderful. It's tiny, it's ergonomic to hold, but it packs a punch, and that also works nicely between bodies. And then there are others, but just those two are my favorites, and so I generally turn to those.
So incorporating a sex toy into the process can help a woman having an intercourse, even though it's the clitoris is the launching pad for this.
It may be the launching pad, but we feel it. We feel it through the whole body. We feel it in the vagina. We feel it all the way through. And the clitoris, is, as you know, but many of your listeners may not, isn't just that little nubbin that you see.
Right.
There's actually this wishbone-shaped bundle of nerves that extends in the labia. You don't see the wishbone part.
But called the clea, right?
Yes, right. Mm-hmm. But once the woman is aroused, then that whole area, the clitoral legs, they're also referred to, become very sensitive and arousable and gorged with blood. And then you may be thinking, this isn't the clitoral orgasm. I'm feeling it so many other places.
Right.
So don't even worry where it originates. If anything that gets you there, enjoy it. And if your partner has a problem with bringing a sex toy in when you're having partner sex, which is something that happens a lot, then if you just explain, I have more trouble reaching orgasm, I need extra stimulation, this really works and lets me concentrate on you.
Oh, that's a beautiful line.
Isn't that nice? I just thought of it.
That you're a quick study. That's very good. That's really good, because it
wish I had that time for my book, Diana.
Because it allows me to concentrate on you.
Yeah.
I have more pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of is a pretty good segue into a tip that I often offer my clients, and that is to help the woman come before or after intercourse.
Yes.
And
that is such good advice.
And I think, you know, the man performing oral sex on her before intercourse is especially popular. And Ian Kerner's book, She Comes First, dedicates itself to that idea.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that's a, you know that book? It's a good book.
I do. I've known that book for decades.
Yes, yes. That way she's highly aroused and usually nice and wet, and even before penetration begins.
Yes.
After he's performed cunnilingus on her.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, just paying attention to lots of nibbles and kisses and arousal and sensations. And
nibbles and kisses, that should be the title of your book.
when I finally get to it, yes.
Right.
Nibbles and kisses.
Nibbles and kisses, you've just titled your book.
That is kind of a cute title, yes.
It is.
Yes. But it's important to get it, to get the clitoris into action with all of this.
Right.
Because there are those 8,000 nerve fibers,
yes.
And you just described the other parts of it. It isn't just the tip. So,
but it's also important. I know you know this, but many sometimes the
listeners
don't.
No, I want you to talk about these things because a lot of people don't know them.
Sometimes we go, oh, okay, so if the clitoris is where the action is, then I'll just go there first. No.
Oh, no, that doesn't work.
Warm up
no.
before you go there.
Yeah.
So this is something that our partners may need to be taught.
Mm-hmm.
That we need much more whole body touching and kissing and getting relaxed before we're ready to have the clitoris touched. If it's too fast, then we'll respond against it. We'll block off the sensation.
And it might not even feel so good to the woman.
It won't feel good, right.
She's not aroused enough.
Yeah.
So erotic massaging is really useful.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I wanted to also talk a little bit about extending life and love, and because having regular orgasms will extend your life and will provide the basis for more long-lasting relationships. Recent studies really have confirmed the link between longevity and orgasm frequency.
Oh, good.
Yes. We know that people who enjoy a regular satisfying sex life, i.e. regular orgasms, are less stressed, less depressed,
they get
and generally
sleep.
More well physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Those are some pretty strong benefits, aren't they?
Yes. But realize also we have to say that it can result in better emotional and physical health, but it doesn't mean you have to have that emotional and physical health to begin with before you can enjoy sex. Don't let that be an excuse. Well, I've got all these conditions going on, and I'm blue, so this doesn't apply to me. No, it can make things better, whatever your situation.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because some of those sorts of ideas may prevent a woman from embracing exploration.
Yeah.
And you know, the pulley of sexual attraction and arousal is not static. So you've got the swing between feeling desirable and connected in a relationship, and that often is in continuous flux and reflects the health of the entire relationship.
Yes.
But it doesn't just have a sexual side. It's,
right.
I also have women who are concerned about faking orgasm.
Oh, did you read my my Senior Planet column on that? I'm the sex advisor for SeniorPlanet.org. I write a column once a month that's based on a reader question.
So tell people how they can look at that, because I did not see it.
Oh, okay. If they go to SeniorPlanet.org, the website, and then if nothing pops up right away, if they just put in the search box, either sex at our age or put my name, Joan Price, and you'll see those will come up. I've been doing those for since last May.
Good.
And one reader wrote in saying that she had been faking orgasm and that what he was doing, what her partner was doing, was not getting her there. But she'd been faking orgasm for so long that she didn't know what to do about it now. So, she got herself into a really tough situation. But the take-home message is, don't fake orgasm. Because our partners really want to please us. They want to know if they're pleasing us for real.
Exactly.
If they're not, they want to know how to. And if we give them that fake feedback that, yes, this is exactly what I need to have an orgasm because, see, I'm having one in front of you.
Right.
But it isn't true. He'll just keep doing that over and over again because he thinks that what you like.
So then he never really learns what you like.
So he never learns what you do like. And we know, and our partners know, that no two women are exactly alike. We don't like exactly the same kind of stimulation, pacing of stimulation. We don't have the same erogenous zones exactly. So as he's trying to get to know us, it's really important that we're honest, that we give him honest feedback. This feels good. No, could you do it this way instead? You don't certainly don't want to say, boy, are you a lousy lover. I could teach you a thing or two. But you do want to say, I love it when you do this, or could you do this too? Or just guide him a little bit. And then
right.
When the orgasm is real, he'll know how to get you there.
Yes, and then the woman has the real physiological health benefits of reaching orgasm.
Right.
More oxytocin, more endorphins, more serotonin. And if she's faking it, she doesn't get those benefits.
Well, I don't think she gets much if she's faking it.
She doesn't, and then she feels badly about it.
Yes, she does, and it's always going to be this wedge in the relationship that he doesn't know that she's not really having orgasms with him.
Studies cite as many as 60% of women have faked orgasm, you know, one time or another.
Well, one time or another could be as we're growing up and we're trying to learn things.
Exactly.
But I would hope that at our age there are very few of us doing that.
Exactly.
I would hope that.
Right.
When are they going to do the research on our age group, Diana? Why do we have to keep guessing about this?
Yeah, most of these studies are on younger women, it's true.
Because you can get college students to volunteer for anything, right?
That's right. Very true.
We may be a little harder to approach.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really useful with your partner to work together to find a path to individual orgasm. And it's kind of the most intimate sharing that can exist. And it can change everything in the relationship because you're being open and vulnerable and saying, this is what I need, this is what I want.
Well, totally true. And, you know, we've been talking all from a woman's point of view here because that's the topic of the show today. But
yes.
I want to say that just about everything we've said goes the other way, too. Men need that kind of attention, too. Men need more stimulation as they get older.
Yes.
Men need to learn to teach their partners what to do to pleasure them.
Absolutely. I'm really glad you brought that up because it's very, very true. And men often, you're right, you said before, most men really want to please their female partners.
Yes.
They really do. So if they get some clues from their lover, they're going to be often better lovers.
Yes, and vice versa. We will be better lovers to them if they will help give us the clues of what they need now and not be embarrassed that it isn't automatic anymore. It isn't automatic anymore. Let's acknowledge that and move on.
Right. So it turns out that breathing, consciously breathing, is really important for orgasm, opening up the mouth, the chest cavity through slow, deep breathing, and then the orgasmic capacities via the vagus nerve. We don't talk too much about the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And then that may lead to powerful orgasms and possibly even multiples. So all of that good. Yeah, that's so good. The vagus nerve does connect all of these functions, the throat, the chest, the cervix, and the uterus.
Mm.
So I suggest to women that they can even pretend like they're singing.
Ah! I'm coming!
Yes. And you, I think in your book, I'm pretty sure I read it, that Annie Sprinkle is quoted as, she is quoted in your book as a sex guru.
I'm not sure I quoted her in my book, so maybe you read this one somewhere else.
Oh, maybe I read it somewhere else. Well, you know who she is.
I do know who she is.
So I have a quick story to tell about the breathing and becoming more aroused and possibly orgasmic by oxygenating your system.
Mm.
So this was about 20 years ago, and at the time I was practicing in Palo Alto, and I went to San Francisco to the Holiday Inn for a learning annex, women-only group meeting with Annie Sprinkle.
Uh-huh.
And it was how to bring out the sexual goddess within.
Uh-huh.
So we're in this rectangular room and at the Holiday Inn, and about three-fourths of the way into the workshop, she said, now, I want you to breathe with me. Ha, ha, ha.
Ah.
Ha, ha, ha. And she kept going higher and higher and higher, and we're all doing this with her. You know, because as you get more aroused.
Was it arousing to do that?
Was somewhat.
Ah.
But the conclusion of the story was rather hilarious. So we ended the workshop, and we opened the door, and apparently on the other side of the wall was a bar, and there were all these men lined up.
No, she knew that, of course.
I don't know that she did. Maybe she did.
She
but here all these
that.
Women are vocalizing, you know, pretending as though they're having really amazing orgasms.
That is hilarious.
But breathing more does help.
I was going to ask, though, was it easy to get a date when you went into that bar?
I didn't try. I was married at the time.
Okay.
But, just vocalizing more and letting loose. It's part of letting go.
Yes.
And I even suggest to some of my clients that they can fake it till they make it. So you let go a little more. If you're usually quiet in your sexual response, just make some sounds and see
mm-hmm.
how that feels.
Mm-hmm.
And it can increase the arousal.
But I also would like to bring it back to this, that there's no one right way to do it. There's no thing you
That's
have
true.
To do.
That's
I worry about someone who is not easily orgasmic listening to this and thinking, oh, my God, how many notes do I have to take about how to do this now? And it really comes down to this. Try new things, and then when you find something that works, do it. And just don't be afraid of the journey. Enjoy the journey. Celebrate the journey. Look what you're able to do. Look how you can fire those nerve endings.
Yes. Beautifully stated. Fire nerve endings. And celebrate the journey.
Yes.
Yes. And practice.
And practice. That's right.
Because
make it a practice.
and I think your Ageless Erotica, and I have recommended it to a lot of my clients.
Thank you. Because
women usually can focus better for self-pleasuring if they're reading erotica.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got some really hot stories in this book.
It was such an exciting book in many ways, on many levels, to do. Because I had wanted to give a voice to erotica writers who were over 50, over 60, over 70, who were willing to write erotica about characters of our age, not just writing the young people's erotica, the traditional erotica. And they were just wonderful, weren't they?
Yes. Oh, there's the music,
what?
So we have
Is that
to
the
stop.
Bell already?
I know. We'll have you back the beginning of next year when your new book has come out.
Okay.
Thank you, Joan, so much.
Thank you, Diana.
It's been a wonderful program. And next week, shifting gears a little bit with Dr. Stephanie Bueller, I'll talk about sex after cancer, which you, Joan, of course, have talked about in your book.
Yes, I have, yes.
But we'll talk some more about all of these things. Joan, once again, such an enlightening, wonderful guest. Appreciate
Always
you.
Always my pleasure, Diana. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye, everybody.